Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talkback Gardening, the first weekend in April. Good morning, John Lamb.
Good morning, Deb, and rain, don't go away.
Exactly. Please come again another day. It was lovely to get some rain last night, wasn't it?
Yes. Interesting. And I think probably a lot of the Adelaide Plains has had around about 20 millimetres, and up on the Adelaide Hills there's 30 millimetres and even more. Really a wonderful prelude to Easter. And for those that love getting out in the garden on Easter, I think it really does set the scene extremely well.
It certainly does. And thanks to everybody that's letting us know about your rainfall. Chris, the fruit and veg truck driver, says, had heaps of rain on the farm, truck stuck in the mud. But then another texter says, spare a thought for those of us in the north of the state who got dust storms and not rain yesterday. Yes, those of us that got the rain certainly appreciate it. Hopefully there will be some coming away. And in fact, we'll be talking about what is coming your way very shortly when our independent climatologist Darren Ray joins us. But John, you're also going to delve into the issue of seed availability following on our conversation from last week's Talkback Gardening.
Yes, in particular, online sales of seeds. It came out of last week's program when we were talking about garden centres and should they remain open, and people were suggesting, why aren't they selling online? Well, there's a lot of people that are selling online, and we take a look at packet seeds. Big interest at the moment, and some of the garden centres are running pretty low in their supplies. So we'll talk to Donna Morabito. She's the communicator for Diggers Seeds. They're probably one of the major distributors of packet seeds in Australia, and we'll take a look at what's available online and why maybe it might be a little bit of a delay, but certainly what's available. And she's also going to comment a little bit on just why people are retreating into the garden and the value of being in your garden over the next probably months or so.
That's right, a very good place to be.
Yeah, and I was going to say, Deb, don't disappear if you're a tomato grower. There's some fascinating information that's come out of our end-of-season tomato survey, and it's not just about the importance of shading. Fascinating information on the way you water your tomatoes and also how much mulch makes a difference.
Oh, I'm looking forward to hearing all about that. And I've also got two brand new April ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away a little later in the program. So stay tuned for that as well. But let's look at the weather, John.
Yes, the latest Bureau of Meteorology seasonal outlook is suggesting that much of southern Australia could have wetter than average rainfall during that April to June period. But you often see that the rain happens on the eastern side of Australia, and sometimes South Australia misses out. So what's in it for South Australia? Independent climatologist here in South Australia is Darren Ray. He joins the program on the first Saturday of every month to take a look at our special forecast for home gardeners. Darren, good morning to you, and sounds like good news ahead.
It is looking like pretty reasonable news. It was good to see some pretty useful falls in the sort of 10 to 15 and 20 millimetre range across South Australia. The Peninsula missed out a little bit in the southeast, but not so much. But some pretty useful falls. That comes after a relatively dry March, where the cold front stayed further south than was expected, and so it came in fairly dry, but some useful rain start with a pulse of tropical activity, fairly weak one, but it did manage to push enough moisture down our way that the cold front that came up has been able to work with that and produce some useful rainfall. So yeah, good start to the month.
And it certainly looks like from the Bureau's seasonal outlook that it's going to be wetter. Maybe we take a look at what's the main driver of the weather at the moment and how that may change. So what's the driver of the weather at the moment?
Yeah, so the The cold fronts that have been staying a bit further south look like they're going to move further north during April, and particularly from about mid-month. So what that means, we'll see lots and lots of cold frontal activity coming through in the second half of the month. It quietens down a bit from now over the next once this the cold air that's over us at the moment moves through. Things stay a bit quiet through the next sort of week and a half, out to about mid-month. We've got some milder temperatures with this massive cold air over us at the moment, but temperatures do warm up next week. So Easter weekend looks really quite pleasant. Good gardening weather to get out, temperatures in the low 20s through sort of Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday next week. And then it does look like it'll start cooling down again for the second half of the month. But in terms of rainfall, we've had this weak pulse of truck activity, and it doesn't look like there'll be much around. It actually probably will be suppressed rainfall from now for a few weeks at least, in terms of large amounts of moisture being pushed down over the country. So I don't think we'll see bits and pieces through the second half of the month. And we're probably waiting until the last week of April before we accumulate some reasonable rainfall amounts.
All right, let's take a look at April then. It could be that, I'll put it to you. Will we receive our average rainfall for April?
We've already had quite a good proportion of that. And, I think we could end up with something similar, maybe another 10 to 15 millimetres accumulating through the second half of the month. So, that'll take us up to around the average for April.
Yes, I think average for Adelaide is around about 38 millimetres. So will we get... We traditionally get a break in the season by Anzac Day. So you're saying that maybe not to any fronts for a little while, then they'll come in towards the end of the month. Will we have enough to, say, declare a break in the season by the end of April?
Yeah, great question. A lot of people would be pretty happy with what they've had as a bit of a start, and I think they'll probably pick up enough through the last week of April that they might feel like they've had a reasonable break all up. I think most places probably will see another 10 or 15 millimetres accumulating over a week or so, so not a big event. We might have to wait till sort of about mid-May or so before we see another potential push of tropical activity that can produce something a bit more significant.
Well, let's take a look at May. April certainly looks like April showers are on its way. We might make a song or two about that one, but let's take a look at May. Will those showers continue?
The first start of May looks a bit quiet. So it looks like we'll get a period of maybe a week or two where it gets a bit dry, and then it picks up again from mid-month. And it looks like the rainfall will pick up reasonably well through the second half of the month. Overall temperatures, close to average, perhaps a little cooler. And, rainfall maybe a little drier through May overall.
So if we take a look at May... would you suggest that we get our May average rainfall?
The models are suggesting it's looking a little drier than April. So perhaps, once again, not too far from average, but maybe a little bit below average all up.
Okay, so April, good average, maybe May a little bit below average. Then we come to June and into July, and I think you're a little bit optimistic about that one in terms of rainfall.
Yeah, so temperatures look average, perhaps a touch cooler than average, the models are pretty clear in going for wet conditions in June, July, and that's also consistent with the shift that I'm seeing particularly in the last week or so of the models towards the wetter climate influences coming in, and so there's been a little bit of a push towards La Nina conditions in the Pacific Ocean and slight push towards negative Indian Ocean dipole influences. So they're both cooler and wetter influences. And that's looking like they might actually start pushing in as we go through winter. And that's reflected in the rainfall, in that we're seeing indications of rainfall that's a bit above it, a reasonable amount above average through June and July.
That's interesting.
Even into August.
You're suggesting La Nina, or some of the models are suggesting La Nina, which means wetter, and a negative Indian Ocean dipole also goes for negative. What's the likelihood we'll get a wet winter?
It's looking pretty reasonable. Now, I don't want to get too carried away with this because the indicators are, there are a couple of models that are going in well into, like a reasonable amount into La Nina territory, but still a number that are still staying quite borderline. So I don't want to get too carried away with that, but it's heading in the right direction. It's, in terms of being something quite a bit different than last year and the year before. So that's good news, I think. And still looking, a majority of the models are still looking a bit borderline, but it's just heading in the right direction in terms of
We look forward to what you say next
winter. Yep.
Yeah. Before we say goodbye, just a peek at springtime. That's a critical time for particularly farmers, but a lot of gardeners as well. Those wetter conditions that our models are suggesting, could they extend into spring?
Yes, certainly. So that combination of climate influences has its impact through can start off during mid to late winter, and then continue into spring and even into early summer. So, things are moving in the right direction is probably the best thing we can say at the moment. So that's a positive indication for this, a good positive indication at this stage of the year.
Well, let's finish on a very happy note. I think many people would be quite happy if we do end up with a wetter than average winter. It's certainly some time since that's happened. And I think a lot of people will be wanting to hear what you've got to say on the first Saturday of next month, Darren Ray. So thank you very much for your contribution.
Yeah, thanks, John. Thanks, Deb, and to everyone listening.
Yeah, thank you so much, Darren. A really wonderful way. It's the brave new world. We're all in three different places. It sounded great. Thank you very much, Darren. Thanks. Our independent climatologist who joins us at the first Saturday of the month here with his seasonal outlook for gardeners. Thanks to Alistair from Clare, who said he had a 5 a.m. dust storm. The temperature was 5 degrees, then 30 mils of rain with lots of wind last night. So you've had a whole lot that's been going on. So really appreciate that. Ross says 5 mils in Murray Bridge. Sorry for those with dust storms. And Marilyn says 32 marvellous millimetres in Stirling East, and the air smells clean. Isn't it a beautiful smell, Marilyn? And Stephen Tarawi even got 12 mils overnight, 69 millimetres for the year to date. That's not too bad for Tarawi, Steve. And Barry says 23 mils at Lobethal. Thanks very much for your rain. We'll get back to your talkback gardening questions in just a moment.
Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
We're off to Blackwood now. Graham, you've got a Lady of the Snow apple tree with bumps on it. Where are the bumps?
They're all over it. That's the problem. I've got four apple trees, a Jonathan, a Granny Smith, a Pink Lady and a Lady of the Snow. I've had a wonderful crop of apples, even on the Lady of the Snow. But now that all of the fruit is gone, all of a sudden I have these very brown, very rough, very hard bumps, all over it, varying from probably 5 centimetres up to a 50 cent size lump, and it protrudes out of the bark darker than the actual bark of the tree, probably by about a centimetre and a half. It's just peculiar. I've been involved a bit with apple trees in the past. I've never seen anything like this on an apple tree before, and I wonder if it's just associated with the Lady of the Snow one and not the others. They don't appear to be on the other trees.
Yes, I suspect from your description that it is due to the rootstock. And I'm not familiar with that apple, but it's probably sounds like one of the older type of apples, is it? Or is it a relatively new hybrid?
Yes, no, I didn't. I just bought it as a an apple tree from a provider.
People with older trees, the old Granny Smith and some of the things that came before that, Rokewood and Yates and things like that, they had a rootstock on them. And often you'll get that kind of a growth on the tree. And it's almost like it's trying to form roots, aerial roots from there. And if you left it alone, you'll probably see little protuberance that look like the beginning of a root. It's physiological, I think. I don't think it's a disease. I don't think it's anything to be of great concern. It's probably associated with
a gall wasp or something like that.
No, I very much doubt it. I can remember on the orchard. I came from a line of five generations of orchards. My great great grandfather was one of the pioneers of the apple industry in Victoria, and I can remember sitting under the old Granny Smiths and saying to Dad, you know, what's going on here? And he was a little bit miffed. And we had Scoresby, the Horticultural Research Centre, not that far away from where we had our orchard. And I can remember one of the horticulturalists explaining that rootstocks can have a big influence on some of the strange growths that you can end up on an apple tree. So I'm not. There's no guarantee that that is the issue, but I'd be pretty certain that it probably is.
Yeah, well, I was just concerned whether I should take the tree out. It looks quite healthy, the tree itself, except for this large number of these, bumps on it.
Yes, if you could take a photograph of it, and if you could get onto the website and the Rare Fruit Society of South Australia, they don't take calls, but there are a couple of wonderful apple growers within the Rare Fruit Society. They would be fascinated with what you've got and probably would actually give you far more detail than I can. But it's an interesting one there, Graham, certainly one worth pursuing. Take a photo, send it to the Rare Fruit Society, ask them whether they could identify it for you, and if they come up with a definite solution, I'd love to hear from you again.
Thanks, Graham. Yeah, please let us know what the outcome is of that. Joy in Glenside has a crepe myrtle. Now, you want to know if you need to cut it back in order to get it to flower, Joy?
Yes, is that correct, John, that if you don't trim or cut it back, it won't flower the following year? I've experienced.
No, crepe myrtles will flower every year, regardless of what you do. They flower on new growth, and that's why most people, or the old-fashioned idea, was that you cut your crepe myrtle back as hard as anything, and that would produce lots of new growth, and that means you get lots of new flowers. You end up with what I'd call a short back and side, something that looks visually not very attractive. So probably a compromise. Let the tree grow, let it have its lovely shape, and then you'll find that there are your main branches, and from those main branches are fairly strong side branches. And if you prune those side branches quite hard, you've still got your main framework there, but you're going to get lots of nice new growth coming out of the main framework, and they will give you a lovely display of flowers in the following summer. I think it's crepe myrtles are one of those trees that should be far more widely grown here in South Australia. It's come through two seasons of extreme heat without a blimp, and I think it flowers for so long, it's very, very hardy, heat tolerant, and certainly it will get by with the minimum amount of water. So if you're looking for a good tree to put in your garden, take a look at the crepe myrtles. You can get them that only grow 2 or 3 metres tall. Some will grow 3 or 4 metres tall. But I think if you're looking for a good tree to put in your garden, I'm talking for other people now, Joy, that are going to be gardening over Easter, take a look at crepe myrtle.
Thank you, yes. No, I've seen a very large one where I used to live, and it flowered every year, and I'm positive nothing was ever cut back from it. So,
yes, well, there were a lot of people that have got crepe myrtles growing in their garden, and they've never seen the secateurs, and they just keep on keeping on. So what happens is, as the tree gets older, you can just get more shorter branches, but you still get the flowers.
Hope you have some flowers shortly, Joy. Roz in Semaphore, have you got a pumpkin problem?
Yes, I have. Ooh. Good morning, John. Good morning, Deb. I've got a lot of self-sown pumpkins, and they've been setting lots of fruit over the last few weeks, and they're starting to form pumpkins. Is it too late for them? Do I rip them all out and chuck them in the compost bin, or what do I do?
That's very... Oh, don't throw them away. No. Isn't it sad? You can have your pumpkins growing and they produce lots of leaves and vines, but no little pumpkins. And we get towards the end of the season, and the plant actually knows the season is coming up to an end, and because of the change in temperatures and day length also has a big influence on the amount of female flowers that are produced, and you'll find you'll get a lot more female flowers, and so you're getting lots of little small pumpkins. In answer to what you're saying, leave them as long as you possibly can, and so long as they actually set, and you'll have lots of little small, like a little squash, and they're absolutely delicious, so don't throw them away. You just cook them up. The only thing is, where you might have a pumpkin and you would want to store it for 6 months, you wouldn't try and do that with an immature pumpkin. But pumpkins are the type of things that you can harvest them at any stage you want to. The longer you leave them, the harder the skin, and the longer they'll store. But from your point of view, Roz, leave them as long as possible, and when the vine starts to wither up, that's the time to harvest them and eat as many as you possibly can. What you can't eat, give away to friends.
Oh, terrific. Thank you very much for that. I'll leave them there then.
Lovely. Thank you, Roz. Lots of pumpkin soup coming up with the change in weather, I think. We're back to the topic of crepe myrtles. Steve in Tuzmore, are you finding you're having trouble getting them flowering as well?
Yes, Deb. Hello, John. Look, my problem is slightly different to the previous caller. I've had these two trees in. They were part of a landscape project. But they're growing like poplars. They're tall and, very slim habit. There's no spreading of the branches at all, and they just don't flower regularly. So I cut it back hard last year and expecting, wonderful things, but the same things happened. The plants just continued to grow vertical. They'd be 3.5-4 metres tall, with no spread in the branches at all. I'm now debating, do I just scratch the whole thing and start again, or is there something I can do?
Do you know what variety you've got?
No, the tag on it has come off, or on them has come off. But
all right. What colour, do you know
like
what colour the flower? It's not.
It just doesn't spread, and the flowers are a mid pink.
Right. What you've got to do is get a decent kind of a frame established. You've cut it back quite hard last season, so I presume you've got lots of long, strong branches which are growing. They're growing to the sky, aren't they?
Yeah, near vertical. Yep.
That's right. Okay, so select probably about 7 or 8 of those vertical branches and tie them down. Tie them horizontally. And so you'll tie them, hold them down horizontally and put some string at the end of them and put a brick in the end of the string. So you hold them down and keep them there. And you probably need to do that for 12 months. And what you're doing is you're training a framework to grow horizontally rather than vertically. And once you've got a framework that's there, it's not going to disappear. It can't sort of magically go from horizontal to vertical once it's established. And I think if you wanted to keep it going, that's what I would be doing.
Okay. And when should I start that? Wait till spring or do it now?
Oh, no, do it now. I mean, the sooner you can do it. What I'd be doing is picking out your 5 or 6 or whatever number you want as your main framework, hold it down now. It's not going to do much growth, and probably you'll find that if you took the strings off in the middle of winter, it would zap back to being vertical. So leave it there, start it now, but leave it for at least another 12 months, maybe longer. And during winter, you've got your five or six or seven horizontal branches, and anything that's towards the centre of the canopy that's growing vertical, take it out completely, cut it back from where it comes from.
So Right.
You're not, and during the next 12 months, anything that's growing vertically very vigorously, remove it.
Okay.
Whereas if you're getting lots of side branches coming from your horizontal branches that you've got, well, you encourage those.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks very much.
It's a little bit off. It's a little bit strange, but I think you might find it's worth a try.
Great, Steve. Excellent call. Thank you very much. Rhea did say on the text line, John, that quite a few people she knows have experienced leaf burn on their crepe myrtles this year.
Ah, well, that's probably because they didn't get any water at all. That would surprise me. Or the other thing is, what happens if you put in your tree is growing very, very vigorously, and if you're putting, you're maybe a little bit over generous with the water, and in particular the fertilizer, what you get is a lot of very soft growth. And then depending, and this season we had very hot weather very early. And so you'll find that there's that very soft growth towards the end of spring, or maybe probably early in summer, and very soft growth. Heat, extreme heat comes along in December, and that will burn. But once it's mature, you'll find that it's got very, very good tolerance to heat.
And Jenny at Goolwa says the end 12 inches of pumpkin leaves are great to cook. They're sold in Pacific Islands markets. So there's another tip for our pumpkin caller.
Oh, and now, that's a good one, Deb.
Isn't it? Something we're going to be talking about a little bit later in the program is tomatoes. Ted is in Stansbury. Now, you've got some growing in raised beds, Ted.
My wife has grown tomatoes in two raised beds this last year. She's pulled them all out now because they weren't the healthiest we've ever grown. They had a bit of a virus, but she wants to grow tomatoes in those same beds again this coming year. And the question, I suppose, is what can we inoculate the soil with that will overcome the nematode problem or whatever it happens to be? It's a root disease of some description.
Righto. Well, take a look at the roots. Have you still got the plants? Are they still in the ground, or have they thrown them away?
They're, as far as I know, they're all gone, John.
Pity, because the important thing was to have a look at the roots. Can you, if you can remember, that the roots had little lumps on them, that's a little nematode in the soil. And that's that's a hard one to control. Otherwise, if you've just got roots which are gone black and soft, that's a fungal disease, or likely to be a fungal disease, and that's not so bad. But regardless, the magic ingredient is compost. So you have removed the plants, take as much of the root system, the old root system out as you possibly can. Yes. And now would be a time to get some good quality compost. And if you could, I'd also be getting some chicken manure, if you can, something that's a little bit strong.
We have an endless supply of sheep manure.
Okay, well, put in large quantities. Well, you know, get some compost and mix up a 50-50 blend of sheep manure and also compost. And what I'd be doing is putting that in a heap, wetting it up, and probably every week, tip it over. You know, keep on blending the sheep manure, breaking it down. And then during winter, once we get to, say, June, I would be taking out probably a fair amount, say a third of the existing material in your raised garden bed, and then filling up your heaped blend of sheep manure and compost, and putting that into your raised bed and mixing it all up, as much as you possibly can. And then leave it alone until you're ready to plant in late September or early October. And stay tuned about what we're going to say about tomatoes, because time of planting is vital, but we won't digress now. The other thing is, just in case you had a nematode problem, be very specific in the varieties of tomatoes that you choose next year. There are certain varieties which have got resistance, in particular to the root knot nematode, and also some of the viral diseases. And you'll find things like Mighty Red and Apollo Improved. Look on the label, and it should have it's got resistance to disease, or it should have it on the labels.
Right. Okay. It gives us something to aim at. I couldn't tell you the variety she has grown, but it is a variety she has kept for a long time.
That's often the problem. People love the old-fashioned varieties, the old heritage tomatoes. They don't have good tolerance to disease, particularly the root knot nematode. And that's why that's why they say don't put your tomatoes in the same place year after year. If you rest the soil, you get after 2 or 3 years, you can go back to that area and put in your tomatoes, and the disease is gone. But if you want to plant your tomatoes in the same spot, very important that you get disease-resistant plants and plant them, and not the old-fashioned ones with the lovely flavours.
Good luck with that, Ted, and listen up, because we're going to hear the results from John's tomato survey. John, we had a text from Yvonne saying a friend loaned her your book, Homegrown South Australia, first published in 2010. She would love a copy of her own. Do you know where she can get a copy?
I think, it's a bit of a collector's item now. I don't know that there are any left. You could try it was published by the advertiser. You could ring the advertiser and say, do you happen to have any leftover remainders or something like that? But it's a collector's piece now.
Yeah, you'll have to keep sharing it with your friend, Yvonne. Thank you very much for that. Thank you for Peter, who sent through a beautiful picture of a happy apple tree flower from last week. Getting lots of texts through from you on the issue of seeds, some saying they're very hard to find. We're going to pick that up in just a moment with Donna Morabito, Communications Manager for the Diggers Club.
Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe.
On ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
In today's viral generated turmoil, I think the garden really is a great place to be. And it's not surprising that there's been quite a run on seedlings and even packets of seed in your local garden centre. And last week it raised the potential. What about online sales? What's out there? And how do you access them? Thought we might talk to one of the sellers of one of our major packet seeds, and that's the Diggers Club, the Diggers Seeds. And we're going to talk with Communications Manager Donna Morabito. Good morning to you, Donna.
Morning, John. Hello, Deb. Thank you for having me.
So, does Diggers have any vegetable packets left for sale?
We absolutely do, John. Luckily at Diggers, we've been obsessive seed hoarders for a very long time. So we have large quantities of seed in stock still, but our issue has been with dispatch capacity through this time. And it really is, as you've mentioned, an extraordinary time. You know, it's such a challenging period for everybody. And I think that's precisely what makes it such a good time for everyone to be in the garden. So because we are seeing this move towards people having time at home, wanting all those rewards of gardening, we have seen an unprecedented spike in orders. And so while our stock level is fine, our capacity, while we're also dealing with these issues around staff safety, which of course is paramount to us, we're having to distance our staff, our capacity has reduced at the same time as this spike. So there's no issue with supply at all. It's basically just a logistical issue for us.
Okay, and I've checked with some of the other online sellers, their major suppliers like Eden Seeds and New Gippsland Seeds. And again, they've got no orders at the moment, please. They're trying to deal with the backload, but they do have supplies and they will open up later on. So maybe put your orders in. We come back to it's the time when people want to put their autumn vegetables in Donna. What kind of vegetables, seeds, would you be suggesting that people should be looking at?
Yes. So we've obviously all of our autumn planting edibles are very popular at the moment. And I should say, when you've mentioned others as well, we have also had to put a pause on orders just for a short time this week. It's the first time we've ever had to do that. But it's basically to give our staff a chance to catch up. Because of that incredible spike. So all of our autumn planting edibles have been popular, our autumn veggie patch seed collections, and we also had a bit of a fast feast collection happening as we saw this incredible demand for our faster growing varieties. So all the brassicas, the green leafy vegetables, our always popular mini cauliflower has gone through the roof in the last few weeks. Peas, lettuces, kale, broad beans, all of that is really popular and is in stock with us at the moment. We've just got a pause on for now. Obviously, it's also the time for garlic. So we do have lots of garlic orders coming through. And as well as flowers, of course, and all of those bulbs. You know, Diggers is not just about edibles. We think every garden needs flowers too. So all the bulbs, your daffodils, your bluebells, your alliums, are all ready to get out there. And once we do open up again, we do have them in stock. We're just kind of coping capacity-wise.
In the past, you've also sold plants. You buy little plants, little herbs and rhubarb and things like that. Will you still be selling those?
We will at this stage, yes. So as you've said, we are focused on seeds, but we also do in autumn and spring key planting times sell speedings, our small seedling plugs. They have been hugely popular and we probably will run out of those because obviously that's a very limited supply.
Do you have to be a member of the Diggers Club to actually buy online?
No, you don't. We are open online for everybody and our retail stores, obviously. At the moment, our retail stores have had to close. Our wonderful store in there at the Adelaide Botanic Gardens is unfortunately closed at the moment. The online pause is only temporary. But when we open up for the first time ever as well, we are going to have a short period where we're member only. And that's just, again, to fulfil our existing commitment to our members to provide access, which we're very serious about. We were kind of established back in the 70s all about providing access to heirloom seeds and rare plants, and our prime commitment there is to members. We're just going to have a little window where they can order for a time, and then we will open up again to the broader public.
Well, that's a very good introduction, I think, to online selling. There's a lot of plants which are now available online, and I think it's an area that is going to continue to expand. So, Donna Morabito from Diggers Clubs, and I just should mention that all your plants, of course, are organic and heritage. But thank you very much for your contribution this morning.
Many thanks, John. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Donna. Donna Morabito, lovely to hear from her. Thanks for your texts on this topic. And thanks to Margaret at Victor Harbour, who said there's a nursery in Yundi that sells protea plants online, and they've been doing it for years. There have been years. Now, Judy at Mawson Lakes, John, has two copies of your book and says if our texter, Yvonne, wants to ring in on 1300 222 891, she's happy for her to have it. So, Yvonne, now is your chance. Call through now and we'll check your number against the text. And Judy is very, very generously going to give that to you. So that is fantastic to hear. Now, Bernie from the Barossa, you've got a lime tree with rolled leaves. Is that right?
Yes. Thank you, Deb and John. John, we've got a lime tree that's been in the ground for about 5 years and it bears quite well and the leaves are healthy, but it seems to want to roll its leaves most of the time. I just wonder why that may be.
Is it getting full sun or does it get sun and then shade?
It gets pretty much full sun.
Right. And is it producing flowers and fruit?
It produces quite well most of the time. The only criticism is they come in the cold weather when my wife is not drinking gin and tonic. She would prefer it to bear in summer.
Righto. There can be a number of reasons why the leaves roll. If they just suddenly happen, it's often when you get very, very cloudy weather and they turn upside down to expose the backs of the leaves to get more light. Sometimes if you get shade, you can shade and sun, that can cause a problem. A variation in temperature, cold weather can cause that. But I don't think any of those apply to you there, Bernie. I don't know that I have a sensible answer for that one. I would suggest if it's flowering and fruiting, you enjoy the tree, look after it as though nothing's happening, give it its normal watering, and I think it's just one of those things.
Okay, thank you very much, John.
Thanks, Bernie. Jennifer at Plimpton Park takes us back to citrus. Oh, with the Lisbon lemon, have we got Jennifer there? I don't know if we do or not. Yes, let's have a look. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi, Deb. Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call. Yes, I have a dwarf Lisbon lemon, which I would like to transplant from its current position to along an eastern fence where I've lost a Protosporum in a hedge. I'm wondering whether this is the right time to do it or whether I should wait until it's dormant in winter.
If you could wait, don't do it in the middle of winter. But do it probably tomato planting time, end of September, early October. You could do it, if it was last week, I would have said do it then last week. But because we've had rain, significant rain, it will, the moist soil, the temperatures, it'll cause the soil temperatures to drop pretty rapidly. And you're going to have a tree which is in a little bit of transplant shock. And I don't know that if we get into a cold, wet winter, it would like that very much. So if you can wait until probably the middle of spring would be ideal.
Okay, that's great. And do you think being within a Protosporum sort of hedge on an eastern side will be sufficient sun?
Yes. Oh, well, I'm not too sure. It needs about at least half the day, so you know, in summer it should be okay. During winter, it needs sun for at least half the day, 5 or 6 hours, if you can.
Okay.
Or 4 or 5 hours during middle winter.
Yep, that'd be fine. Okay, terrific. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the call, Jennifer. Lovely to hear from you. And something that I imagine you might be talking about shortly when we look at the results from the tomato survey, John, is shade cloth. Marie in Inman Valley, good morning. You've been using it on your veggies?
Yes, I have. Good morning and thank you for the call. Look, my husband's got a raised vegetable garden bed and he's planted cauliflowers, the winter vegetables, and he's got a 50% shade cloth over them from summer. Is it wise for him to take that off or leave it on?
Very much so. You'll find that vegetables are sun lovers and mostly they grow in full sun. But because our weather here in South Australia, the temperatures become extreme, many gardeners have now discovered that shade cloth makes all the difference, and it's not just tomatoes, it's all vegetables, all herbs and a lot of flowers. But once we're past the hot weather, I would be suggesting remove the shade. If you leave the shade on there, you're not getting enough light, and that will reduce the potential for your plants to produce maximum crops.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Marie.
Thank you.
Easy just sorted there. Now I've got a couple of brand new ABC April Gardening Australia magazines to give away. If you would like to win one of them, call through now 1300 222 891, 1300 222 891. And in just a moment, we are going to hear from you, John, on the results of your wonderful tomato survey. You get so much information from people from that, so stay tuned for all of that information. Next, it's
Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Well, the phones are running hot. Congratulations to Julie in Woodchester and Sharon in Glenelg South, who have won themselves the ABC Gardening Australia magazines for April. Now, John, you have been conducting your tomato survey over the last few weeks in your Good Gardening newsletter. What have you discovered?
I've discovered gold. And the survey was designed specifically this year to take a look at what are the good gardeners doing that are not being done by those who continually produce poorer crops. And nobody knew when you're filling it in, it was the same survey, but because the way it was designed and the little machine that calculates behind it was able to separate those that had good crops, good or excellent crops, from those that had poor or disappointing crops. Now, the interesting thing is that, first of all, 58% of all growers, good crops and poor crops, 58% reckon it was a good season. Okay, but that compares with, compares with 30% last year. And that's an increase of 18%. In other words, despite the fact it was just as bad a season, extreme weather, gardeners are reporting that they are getting better crops. And I believe it's because, in particular, the better gardeners are adapting to climate change. They're adapting to the extreme conditions. And obviously one of those most extremes, of course, is the heat. And those that had good crops, 55% of them rated heat as a problem. On the other hand, those that had poor crops, 85% blamed the heat. That's a 30% difference between what the good growers are saying and those with poor crops. And so heat is an issue, a big issue. So we then come to, the things that ameliorate the heat. And, of course, that's shade cloth. I was heartened that 70% of all growers are now using shade cloth, which is interesting. Now, without drilling into too much of the detail, all I'll say is that there was a big difference between how the shade cloth is used. And you were asked, did you use the shade cloth all day, only in the afternoon, or only on hot days? Now, the good gardeners, or those with good crops, were putting the shade cloth on all day. Most important, shade all day, whereas those with poor crops were more likely to have their tomatoes shaded in the afternoon only or only on hot days. But shading is obviously a critical factor. We come to watering. It's interesting that 10% more of the good crops were watered by drippers. But probably of greater significance is the amount of water and the duration. And there was probably a lot more of the good crops that were watered less frequently, but deeper. On the other hand, those with the poor crops were putting on light waterings, but more often. So the way you water is critical. And as we get into the tomato season next year, we'll expand on that particular issue. And perhaps one other we'll take on is mulch. Okay, 80% of everybody who responded are using mulch, but it's the thickness of mulch. And a simple thing like putting on a medium-sized layer of mulch, 3 to 4 centimetres, those that had good crops put on a 3 to 4 centimetre layer of mulch, whereas those that had poor crops, there were more of those using a thin layer of mulch or no mulch at all. So the amount of mulch you put on is a big factor. Deb, they're just three of the issues. We haven't had a look at time of sowing, or time of planting, which is critical, the kind of fertilisers, and maybe we'll revisit this next week. And could I just say that there is a lot more detail in this week's Good Gardening newsletter. We'll have some more information in next week's Good Gardening newsletter. And if you subscribe and get next week's, you can always get back copies, so you can get the details of what we're talking about this week, well, you can access that by going into next week. I don't know whether I've got overcomplicated that there.
No, Deb. I understand what you're saying. So the important thing is to put into your search engine Good Gardening Newsletter, John Lamb. Subscribe to it. It will come into your inbox every Friday. You can look at back issues. And, of course, we podcast the 9 until 10 o'clock hour of Talkback Gardening, so that is available for you to listen back to as well. Well, I reckon we've got time to squeeze one last caller in, John, which is Debbie in Alford with an orange tree in full flower. Hi, Debbie.
How you going? Yeah, my blood orange is a dwarf, and it missed a season because it had a heavy crop, and now it's in full flower, and I was just wondering, should I take the flowers off?
Wait until those fruits have started to set. You'll find that after the flowers, most of the flowers, 90% of the flowers will drop, and then there'll still be quite a lot of little, tiny little fruits setting. And if you get a lot of them setting, again, do nothing until they're probably about the size of a small fingernail. And at that stage, the tree has decided that's the number of fruit it's going to hold. If there is a very large number of fruits still on the tree, once they've all set, and that's probably about 6 weeks after flowering, if there's a big number of fruits there, just get your secateurs and just thin the bunches out and just cut them and just reduce the number so that you lighten the load. And if you lighten the load this year, you should get a reasonable crop in the following year.
Okay, and it's all right that it's flowering now. Doesn't make any difference. Because all the other ones have flowered.
Well, it's a little bit out of kilter. You might find those flowers will just sit there and do absolutely nothing during winter. And as we come out of winter, you might find that they'll start setting there. And you might find that it'll continue to flower.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Debbie. Lovely to have everybody with their lovely texts and phone calls this morning. Thank you very much for being a big part of Talkback Gardening. We wouldn't exist without you, so we'd love to have your company. And gardening's never been more important, has it, John?
Could you? I just sort of looking, Deb, I was amazed that probably of the questions that we got through, about 50% of them involved citrus.
All of a sudden,
people have discovered their citrus trees. Yep, so fascinating, isn't it?
It sure is, and I couldn't be without mine, okay. I tell you. Well, next week, we'll look more at tomatoes.
Yes, we'll take more on the tomato survey. I'm not too sure we'll talk about a particular issue, and I think I'm going to retreat into my garden. Hope you're able to do the same at your place, and I'll say until next week, good gardening.